Are 50-50 relationships actually ruining connection? Is masculinity still valuable in modern dating? Or has feminism flipped the script? Today we're getting real about masculine and feminine energy, gender roles, and what it takes to build a modern, traditional relationship with guests John and Nicole Solmez. The man is the leader? Quick heads up, friends. I've partnered with Paul Bauer from the Come On Man podcast, and he's got four killer resources that can seriously up your dating game, from building confidence to mastering conversations to the dead bedroom syndrome. It's all stuff I stand behind. And yes, I get a small commission if you grab one. You're not just supporting yourself, you're supporting the show too. Win-win, right? Check the links in the show notes. Now on to the show. Welcome to another episode of the Digital Dating Podcast. And I am really excited today because I have a husband and wife with me, which is not something I often have. Today joining us is John and Nicole Solmez, if I pronounce it that's correct. Welcome to the show, John and Nicole.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right. Let me tell the audience that you are the host and co-host or hosts of the podcast called BTB Beyond, Better Than Perfect. And you want to tell us a little bit about the podcast first?
Sure. So we do a weekly podcast, a video podcast, where we talk about modern traditional relationships and the value of having them, which is having a masculine and a feminine role in the relationship, and in how to create a relationship that that you grow together through in what we call better than perfect, because the perfect relationship is one that that doesn't really exist. And when you try to have a perfect relationship, you end up being very superficial and hiding things, not really dealing with issues. So to have a better than perfect relationship, you grow together, you know, complement each other, and you overcome the obstacles and the issues, which makes it actually better than if you just pretend like it's perfect.
So would you call it, like when I was growing up, or like my parents, old-fashioned, traditional? Or is this, because we don't see that in today's world.
Yeah. We call it modern traditional because in terms of roles, it is more like the old school traditional. John is the sole provider and I stay at home and take care of the home and we have a daughter. But in the sense of where it's not like I chose John just because he has a job. Like I chose him for the man that he is. And he also values, you know, my input and things as well. So it is those roles. It is like the old school way. But I think what they lacked back then was that they weren't really a team. Like it didn't feel like a team effort, whereas that's why we call it the modern traditional, because there's that team aspect where we work together to get through things either in our personal life or, you know, at home or whatever we need.
Yeah, I think a lot of it back then was, it was more, you know, that's just how things were, right? The man goes to work, the woman stays home, as opposed to what we kind of our spin on it with the modern aspect of it is that you choose this, right? You choose to have a relationship where the woman is going to be in her feminine and she's going to stay home and fulfill that role. And as a man, I'm choosing to be in the masculine. So we've made this choice instead of being forced into the choice, which I think makes it more powerful.
Let me throw a term at you and I just want to see your reaction. And I'm only throwing it out there to see if this is what you're talking about. The man wears the pants in the family.
Yeah.
Is that what you're defining?
Essentially, yeah. The man is the leader, right? He's the one who has the final say. I always say, you know, the man is the captain of the ship, mm-hmm. right?
Okay. Well, that's how I grew up. That's how my parents were. When I got married, I met my wife at my job. So we were both in a hospital and we were both working. So it was a naturally two-income household. And it stayed that way until we got divorced. But then the second marriage, no, I was the breadwinner. So it's interesting. Okay. So in social media, other podcasts, there's the red pill movement. There's all sorts of stuff going on today that is counter to what you're trying to spread the word. What are some of the things that you see in social media or are here on other podcasts that either you're trying to get the message out that that's not, I guess the first thing I should say is to everybody, each their own, but there is a high divorce rate. There are men that the dating world is a mess. People are just not, the numbers are down, the dating apps are struggling. So any insight as to why that's happening? Is it because you think of this new twist on everything should be, like we go on a first date, everything now is split the bill, right?
Right.
I don't. My first date, I went on a date last week, and I don't know if I'm going to see her again, but I picked up the bill. I'd like to see her again, but I picked up the bill. You know, and if she said, would you like to leave the tip? I said, no. Well, she didn't ask, but I would have said no. So is that somewhere like what you're talking about?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I think, too, another thing that our podcast does is there's a lot of like women hating men and men hating women. And that I think is contributing to the like totally messy dating world. And with our podcast, we're trying to highlight what men bring to women and what women bring to men and kind of like get people to appreciate each other and to value each other and to like admit that we need each other. Like we really do. To be like in an ultimate union where we're the happiest, we need each other. Because I was definitely a type of woman before John came along where I was in my masculine because I was single and, you know, I was doing everything myself. And then when I met John and we got together and I really trusted him to take over all of like the masculine things that I was doing and I could just be more feminine and it was a safe place, it created a harmony that I've never experienced before. And I can't speak for John, but I'm sure, you know, having me, you know, take care of the things at home and be like the feminine person that I am because he's like protected that for me has probably changed also, you know, how he was before we got together as well.
Yeah. I think that you're right that like society is kind of messed up right now. A lot of the cause of this is that we really live in a very feminist society that has a feminist worldview, a very woke kind of feminist worldview. Yep. The problem with that is it's like, I think you have red pill guys that are like, oh, we hate women, we hate feminists. And that's not the message either, right? Because the message that I want to bring forth and that we both bring forth is one of love. And I think that's critical because it's like we can recognize that we live in a feminist society and that it's not good for women to try to be men, all right? And it's not good to alienate men and especially young boys and to make them feel like there's no place for them, that they don't have any special place, that the Boy Scouts is now the Boy and Girl Scouts. They don't have their own. We need to really bring back those roles and have young men to not be disenfranchised anymore so they have some hope for the future, that they can actually, their masculinity is valuable. But we also need to encourage women again to say, look, you don't have to be a man. You don't have to step up. You don't have to be this super boss babe woman. That's not your calling. Like, yeah, you could do those things if you want to, but being feminine, being a woman, taking care of a family, being nurturing, those are good qualities. And those are important qualities to society. And so when we have women acting like men and we have men that have no place, they don't even know, you know, they're afraid they're going to step on toes, whatever they do, because they don't have any place. We have a weaker society. We have weaker families and we have super high divorce rates, right? We're meant to be synergistically aligned with each other. We're meant to be interdependent, right? And that interdependence is actually very, very valuable. And so I think that's really the thing that we're seeing today is that people have forgotten that. Men have forgotten what the pride of being a man. Women are trying to step up and say, I don't need a man. And both of those things are extremely destructive to the family and to ourselves, to our own souls, to our sense of well-being, because we need those attachments. Those are important.
You said something that really resonated with me. The man, well, let me ask you this. Do you have children?
Yeah.
How many?
One.
Okay. And I'm not getting personal. Just how old?
Oh, yeah. No, she's a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, okay. So she's seeing how you two are. How long have you been married?
We've only been married for 2 years. We've been together for 4 years. I was married prior. She's from my previous marriage.
Okay. Yeah. You said something earlier and it resonated with me. The whole concept of the man, masculine toxicity. That's what I wanted to bring up. There is this whole movement that masculinity is toxic now. And that's what I'm seeing on social media. That's what I'm hearing. And I've even had guests come on here and say that. And I had somebody on just a couple of weeks ago who was talking about what you're talking about. We got to bring the masculinity back into relationships or into society. This is what I remember, what I wanted to talk about. It was, I don't know, 5-10 years ago when you started seeing men in television commercials being made fun of. Yeah. As
Gillette commercial, right? Yeah.
Which one?
The Gillette commercial, that famous Gillette commercial. I think that was about 5 years ago. The Gillette razors were... I
remember the commercial. Tell me what happened.
There was just a few different scenes where it was like some woman walked by and some guy like was going to go and talk to her. And this other guy like pushes him away and is like, that's not cool, man. And like, yeah. It was just, yeah, there's a lot of stuff where it was just really painting masculinity in a very negative way.
Yeah, I've just seen a lot of commercials where they make they reverse the roles, the man and the female roles. So the wife, the guy's at home taking care of the kids. I don't have a problem with the staying at home dad. If that's what works for them, maybe he met somebody and she's a lawyer and he was, I don't know, plumber and they make more money. It's logical for her to go out and make the money, but I can see how that can disturb the balance. So let's talk about that. What you in your bio, and I wrote a couple of these down. Why 50-50 doesn't work? So this is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So why doesn't it work?
You want to take
There's
the first
a
crack?
Lot of elements, but the first one I'll bring up is that when you do 50-50, because I've been in 50-50 relationships prior to John, and you know, being in them, I was like, I didn't find anything inherently wrong. Like, you know, it just seemed normal. Honestly, and that's probably what a lot of people fall into as well. But also realized getting with John that a part of the 50-50 that people don't even think about because they just think about financially 50-50 a lot of the time is that when you're in a 50-50, a lot of times you're just two individuals together rather than when you get into a relationship, what you're supposed to become is one. And I get that that really is supposed to happen when you get married, but that part is missing if you continue to do 50-50, even when you get married. It's like two individuals doing their own thing under one roof. It doesn't really harbor the intimacy and the connection that what we do, like with John being the provider and then me staying at home, kind of creates. Like, it's not to say that we're not individuals, but it creates this sort of another entity, which is the marriage and which is this like unit that we become because we have the roles that make this one kind of like better thing than what we are as two separate people. And it keeps the chemistry between us at an all-time high, you know, allows us to not yell at each other, to have respect for each other. Like, it just has created this dynamic that I never experienced in a 50-50 relationship because it was always like, okay, well, you're going to pay for this and I'll pay for this. And so it was like I was kind of living my normal life just with someone else, but I never really felt like they were like we were a unit or like some new couple, if that makes sense. Like, we didn't feel connected.
And I think as, you know, as a man, right, I talked about before, like a man should have pride in being a man, right? He should say, okay, a woman, the feminine, should be cherished, right? I know today everyone's like, women are trash, Western women are trash. That's such a wrong way to think about it. It's a very victim mindset thinking. Like, I want to pay for a woman. I want to pay and take care of my woman so she can relax in her feminine and she doesn't have to worry about money and bills and she doesn't have to worry about like figuring out the logistics of trips and all of these things, because what I need her to support me in going out and conquering the world. I need her to give me the confidence and the strength, the support, the sexual energy that's going to make me a fierce man in the world, right? If we're both trying to fight the world, we're weaker, right? But together, you know, when I'm taking charge as the man, she can relax. And in fact, the thing about it is that when you have a 50-50 relationship, you cannot have sexual polarity because you need a masculine and feminine. Just like a north and south magnet, you need the opposites in order to create that attraction and polarity. And so if I am saying, okay, well, you're going to pay your half and I'm going to pay my half, and I'm treating the relationship like that instead of taking care of the woman, protecting, providing for her, then she's not going to be able to be in her feminine, right? We might be able to operate. We might be able to operate as business partners. And some people have relationships that are fine. They do 50-50. They're like, there's no problem with that, which I get. But it's the same as being a business partnership. The difference is that when you have that polarity, that sexual polarity where you have one pole and the other pole, now you create what is really attraction and that energy, and you create that synergy in the relationship. So I think that's too many people are thinking about, you know, guys are afraid of getting taken advantage of women if they get a free meal from them. It's just the wrong way of thinking. It's not really seeing the value in the feminine, because the masculine is valued by what he does, what he accomplishes. The feminine is valued just for being feminine. Right. And just like you put a piece of art on the wall and you don't say, well, what does that art do for me? Well, it's a beautiful piece of art. That's the value of it. It doesn't have to do anything in order to be valuable. Right. Not to say that a woman doesn't do anything in a relationship, you know, but it's different than the way that a man contributes to the relationship. And I think that's we've somehow fundamentally lost that and lost the value of that.
OK, I wrote down a bunch of questions and I don't know if one of them you can answer. When, for example, let's say, so the daughter that you have is from your previous marriage and you don't have a child, but let's say that you had a child and it was a toddler, 2 years old, 3 years old. And we all know that they can be a real handful. I have three boys, so I went through that. There's this thing about when the guy comes home from work and mom was home all day doing the laundry, taking care of the kid, doing the grocery shopping, yada, yada, yada. And the kid was a nightmare. It was terrible twos, let's say, or whatever. You hear about this when the father comes home, the mother hands the kid to the dad and goes, here, it's your turn. You're smiling. What's your take on that?
I just think, like, I know the man that John is, and I know that we communicate really well. So if I told him, like, hey, you know, little Jeff has been just really crazy today, that he's the type of man that even though he's been working all day, he would help me out. And that really, like, proves what type of man John is. But I think, too, it does tie into that he takes pride in doing the hard things and helping me and trying to take stuff off my plate so that I don't have to, like, get into this masculine phase or, like, you know, moment. And so John's always been, like, very supportive, you know. So
okay.
I feel like I wouldn't be like here.
Yeah,
take
I would
him.
Be insulted if
that
he was like,
he would be
I'd be
upset
like, that's
over.
That's not cool. Right. Because it's not it's like that's an entitlement type of attitude, right. You know, whereas it's like, no, I do above and beyond because I choose to do that,
right,
out of love, not because I have to do that. Or you're like, oh, you're entitled that you're going to say, oh, well, now it's your turn. That would be very insulting to me. I wouldn't like that at all. But of course, I would go and do whatever I can. You know, sometimes even, you know, with a 14-year-old, there is definitely days.
I gave the example of a toddler, but the young teenage years or the teenage girl can be a nightmare.
Yeah, some days.
Is her mom in the picture?
She is. Yeah, we have time custody. Okay. But yeah, some days she'll have a hard time. You know, she's driving her to places and stuff. And I'll go upstairs and I'll make a bath for Nicole and, you know, and there give her a little bit of a break. Yeah. You know, it's like, but she doesn't expect that. It's not an entitled type of thing. And that's what.
And that's what I would do. I that's the kind of guy I am. If I get home, if I had a long day at work and I got home, I don't expect the wife to. Let me just quickly tell you a story. Even though I said that's how I grew up and my parents were like that. My father was a doctor and he worked long back in those days, you to build a medical practice, you worked from 6 in the morning. And even when you came home for dinner, he would get a call at 7 o'clock. There's a patient at the hospital that went into respiratory distress. Out the door he went, he'd come back. But let's just say that there were regular nights. He would come home. Mom had his dry martinis in the freezer waiting for him. So and he was a beef eater gin guy and he belonged to the beef eater gin club or whatever. And she would have the martini glasses frosting in the freezer with the olive or I think they use onions, whatever. And when daddy got home, everybody, daddy had his chair, like Archie Bunker. I don't know if you remember all the family. Yeah. He had his chair and mom would serve dad the martini. And I'm the oldest and I have three younger sisters. And many times we would want to go see daddy. Hi, daddy, you're home. And mom would stop us and say, no, let daddy read the newspaper, you know, and enjoy his martini, you know. And I just remember that growing up. So mom took care of dad, but almost too much. Like she kept the kids away from him for, I don't know, half hour. And then when he came to the dinner table, that's when he would ask each one of us, how was your day? What'd you do at school? How was the play? How was soccer? Whatever. Anyway, as you were talking. All right, I want to jump into the dating world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like I had mentioned earlier, I'm in my 60s. While I have been dating for the last 15, 20 years, and in and out of relationships, and none of them were healthy or worked or went anywhere, although I have been married a couple times and yada yada. If I go on a dating app today or even just meet somebody, the woman most likely is either coming out of a divorce or has been divorced. She was married 30 years. The kids are off to college. They got the empty nest syndrome. And she has received either part of his you know what, they split the assets or whatever, and she's got her own money. And it's a interesting dynamic. But when I was young and dating in my teenage years and 20s, even though I told you that my first wife worked and we met at a hospital, when I was dating, I had that mentality that you're talking about. I would look for a woman who was looking for a guy to take care of her financially and sexually and be the masculine, wear the pants in the family. And that's how I wanted it to be. But today, I don't, women in my age bracket that are on dating apps, they have their own money. And you'll see in the profile, I'm not looking for a man with money. I don't need your money. Right. You see? So, but now let's go back. I don't know how old you are, but I can guess. Let's go back to the late, my boys are between 26 and 38, and two of them are dating. One of them is married. I can only imagine what they're coming across on the dating apps or in the dating world, because young women today in their 20s and 30s have careers. Most of them, right? They're nurses, they're becoming lawyers, whatever. How can we turn the society around when it's already, you see where I'm going? The younger generation is being brought up that the women are now working.
Right.
They have careers. They're going. Oh my gosh! I think the majority of the coaches and psychologists and therapists I've had on here were women. And they got their PhDs and masters. And so, how is the young generation going to? How's one of my sons going to find a woman who's not working or doesn't have a career?
I don't think he has to find one that's not working or doesn't have a career. In fact, I think most young women should plan on having a career and working, because it's going to be hard to find a man that you trust enough with your life, which is what it is, right?
Okay.
And so, but here's the thing, right? Because when I met Nicole, she was working. But as our relationship progressed and she realized that I would take care of everything, and she had that trust in me as the man to be the leader, to be the captain of the ship, she said, okay, I can let go of this. I don't need to work anymore. I'm going to let John take care of me. And yeah, if we both work, would we make more money? For sure. But it's not about the money aspect of it, right? It's about what is going to create the best dynamic. And so I think, you know, when I was dating, the way that I approached it, even with Nicole, was I ignored all of the feminist stuff. I ignored all the way. I just acted in such a way that, look, I'm the man. I'm going to take care of things financially. I'm the man. I'm going to open doors. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to act in the masculine. And hey, if you don't like it, well, I'm not going to change how I'm acting.
Right.
And I think that's the thing as a man, is that you just got to say, all right, hey, this is what I'm looking for. This is how I'm going to be. And you have to assume that role. And what I have found is that, because I dated before Nicole, I dated a lot of feminist women. I dated a lot of women that had careers, had jobs and stuff. When I acted that way and showed up that way, as much as on the internet, they're like, no, I would never let a man do that. They did, right? Because it was actually refreshing to them. Even though they're saying they don't want that, they can recognize that, oh, I do want that. But they don't want a man to ask permission to do these things. They want a man to say, no, this is how it is. I'm the captain of the ship.
I'm hearing that while the social media and the dating profiles show I don't need a man's money. I don't need a man's, I don't need him to, that's really not true. They do want, they want the man to be masculine and protective. I don't think I've ever told this story on this podcast, but when I was in my, I don't know, late 20s, I went to this bar with my then wife, and I don't know how we ended up there, but it was a biker bar. We kind of had the hint because all the bikes were parked out front, but whatever, it was local bar. We went in and she went up to get her, we had some drinks and we were sitting and she went up to the bar. And while she was trying to wiggle her way in, and she was a petite little Irish gal and beautiful, and she tried to get into the bar, and all these bikers were around the bar. And when they saw her coming, they kind of parted like the Red Sea, you know? And they, of course, did what these type of men do. They started, help me out here.
Hitting on her? And
yeah, they're hitting on her. They were whistling and making inappropriate gestures. And then when she was at the bar, they were behind her doing things, you know, whatever. And it angered me. So I jumped up and I ran towards the bar. Now, at that time, I was all of 140 pounds, you know, maybe wet. And I tackled some of these guys as if, like, you're not going to do that to my wife.
Right.
You know, you're not going to act that way. And of course, I got my ass kicked and we were thrown out. But
you stood up.
Yeah, I stood up. Yeah. I stood up for her.
Yeah.
And that's what
it was like, an instinct kicked in. With no disregard to my well-being.
Right, exactly.
I could have gotten really hurt. But so I think
it's a test too. As a woman, I think it's a test, because I think that she's telling you she doesn't want your money, or, you know, she doesn't need help from you, but she wants to see how much of a man you are to do it anyway. Like,
right.
Even if she's resisting you,
right,
that, you know, you're still going to do what your morals are, and it doesn't matter what she says, because again, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I understand that. But also, when you are around that masculine presence, or like a man stands up for you like that, there's something in every woman that's going to be like, that's a man, like that's attractive, like that's what we want. Like, that protection of like women is what women need to be feminine. And so she's really trying to find that. Are you going to protect her? Like, are you going to do what you're going to do, and you're going to be a good man regardless of if I'm like, I don't need your money. Like, I don't need you to open my door. Are you going to do it anyway? That's like what she's kind of hoping for, without being like, will you open the door for me? Cause then she can't like test you. I get that it's probably frustrating as a man, but if she just says, oh, I would love for you to open doors and, like, you know, pull out my chair. Even if a man does that, it's like, is he doing it because I told him, or is he doing it because he's a man and that's what he does?
And there's a biological reason for this, right? So
I was just going to say that. Go ahead.
Like, in a lot of species of animals, like birds, for instance, there will be a fake. The bird will fake. It will pretend to be even another species of a bird, or to be the alpha, you know, to have these qualities. And the female bird will test the copycat bird, right, in order to make sure that it's not just getting in there to get the mating, to get it as its mating strategy. And so I think it's the same thing. Is you have a lot of men today that, you know, we call them nice guys, right? They get in the friend zone because they will do anything. They're people pleasers. They'll do anything to please a woman, which means that they don't have any spine. They don't have any backbone. They're not really a man. And so women do have to, you know, they have to test a man. They have to make sure that this guy is doing what he thinks is right. Because a leader who just follows what other people want is not a very good leader. You're not going to submit to a leader who you don't trust is acting out of their own judgment, if you think that they're influenced by other people. And so, you know, you see this all the time. And I think it is an important thing that women do test guys this way. And they're truly masculine men. He's gonna do what he wants to do. And a woman wants to see that. In fact, you know, I think it's kind of funny because so many women say, oh, no, I don't want a man that is going to be dominant. I don't believe in that. I would never be submissive to a man. Yet 50 Shades of Grey was one of the best-selling books of all time. And so how do you, you know, make sense of that? What makes sense to me is that at the outward, it's not popular for a woman to say that she wants a man that's dominant, that is in control, that knows how to take charge and lead, because it's not popular socially. And also, you know, she doesn't want to just give the steering wheel to the man. She needs a man that is not going to accept anything less. And that's what women want. So secretly, women do want this. And it's shown through, otherwise 50 Shades of Grey, who bought it? It wasn't men that bought it. It was women.
I'm writing this down. I'm writing who was the biggest audience for the 50 Shades of Grey. It was women.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The book and the movie. I remember one of the movies came out. One of my girlfriends wanted to go see it. I was like, I don't want to go see that movie.
Right. Yeah. Now, I think there's a bit of a perversion in the 50 Shades of Grey of experiencing the masculine, the dominance of the masculine in a way that's not healthy, that comes from an unhealthy wanting of a powerful man and to feel his power and to feel that submissive quality. So I think that there is kind of an element within society that's not good about that, but it still shows this deeper need to have a man be in control.
But let's also just keep in mind that the storyline, if I remember correctly, the male, I don't remember his name or even who the actor was. He had mommy issues. And he was, I think, psychologically disturbed by something. So he needed to do this. But the whole concept of the woman, of the man being that dominant over a woman. Yeah. I unfortunately ended up seeing the movies. So we must have watched the same Discovery Channel thing, because I saw that episode where one of the male birds got on a limb and puffed up his feathers and started dancing around, and all the colors came out. And it was because he was trying to attract the female bird. And she was kind of just sitting there watching to see, like, you know, are you, like you said, it was a test, right?
Yeah.
And so the female bird is watching all the male birds do this, and she's going to pick the most masculine one, the one that has the most forte. And so it was funny because everything you're saying, I'm writing down before you even say it. So, yeah. Nicole, what did you do before you stopped working?
I sold wedding dresses.
Interesting.
And I did social media for like some small businesses. That's what I was doing before I sold wedding dresses, is I was working at a marketing agency doing social media for other businesses. My degree's in advertising, but then I didn't really like that job. So I kind of branched out and did it on my own. But I was like, I need like a part-time job as I'm like building up some clients, because I didn't want to take any clients from my previous job because that's just not who I am. And then so I got in the wedding dress industry and I freaking loved it so much. It was such a fun job.
Well, yeah, for a woman, women love bridal things.
Yeah, and it was feminine, you know, like it was feminine and fun. It was like playing dress up. You know, I say that all the time. I was like, it was like playing adult dress up for like the coolest dress you're ever going to wear as a woman. Like what more could a woman want?
Did you play with dolls as a child?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So you said you met 4 years ago and you've been married two?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long into the relationship did you quit your job?
So I did keep it for, I think, like 9 or 10 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, John, he was like, you don't have to, but I did still want to contribute some amount. But then when I, because we were in Florida when we first met, that's where I was living. John, you know, was visiting when we first went on our first date from California. So things got more serious. And then I moved out to California. And that's kind of when, you know, John was like, you don't have to work. This was before we were engaged, which was also scary. And it was also the first time in my, you know, adult life that I didn't have a job, because I grew up, like when I was in college, I had 3 jobs at one point, at one time. So I'd always worked. So it was a weird adjustment at first, you know, because I had been brought up too with like, you know, I'm like, what am I providing? You know, because I was in that 50-50, my parents are 50-50, you know, sort of people. And like, so it was normal to me. And so then I'm like, John, what am I providing to you though? Like, you know, even if it's like a little bit of money, I'm like, I'm not providing you. And he was like, no, you're providing me the support by being able to focus on our home and on me and on, you know, our child. So it was like, you know, which I say child, because she's basically my child at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stepdaughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did you meet?
We met on a dating app, actually, on Tinder.
On Tinder, of all places. Okay. The reason I say that, because Tinder has this, it's supposed to be a hookup app, right?
Yeah.
That was my intent.
That's why John used it.
My intent.
It's funny because I had downloaded it because one of my friends who was like 3 years older than me at the time was like, yeah, I met my boyfriend on there. I was like, your boyfriend? Like, Tinder's not for boyfriends. And she's like, no, he's really great. And so I was like, okay, let me try it. Cause I deleted it when it started turning into like the hookup app and was just using some of the other ones. And then when she said that, I was like, okay, well, maybe I should try Tinder again. And then John comes along and here we are.
Yeah, I wrote down a whole bunch of questions. Let's go back, and then I want to talk about your podcast. I want to go back to the part, because we kind of just took a left turn when I asked you another question. The whole concept of the masculinity is, and I think you mentioned this, it's in our genes. So, and I know you people are going to roll their eyes, but back in the caveman days and everything up into the Native American Indians and all around the world, The men were the hunter-gatherers, and the women reared the children, and they cooked. And so the men brought home the food, but the women would cook the food. And yeah, that how it's been for 20, 30,000 years. In the past two decades, or three decades, because the feminism movement started in the 60s when the women were burning their bras. I was born back then, and I used to remember watching women burning their bras. But in the last 40, 50 years, you can't change what's been in our DNA for 50,000 years.
Mm. Yeah.
They're trying to. There's all these, this movement now. You got, and what's killing me is you got every pill on the market. You got the black pill, the blue pill, the red pill. You got all these pills going on. And I only know a little bit about the red pill movement, but I don't even know what the black pill is. I think they hate women altogether.
Yeah.
They just think that women only like are only attracted to men that are attract, that it's looks, that looks is the only thing that matters. And if you don't have looks, then you might as well not even live as a man, basically.
So that, so because now, and because this is a dating podcast, this comes up a lot. Women, they say, on the dating apps are looking for the 666. Six-figure income, 6 foot tall. Some will say six-inch dick, or they could say, what was the other six? There's two.
Six-pack abs. Yeah.
Six-pack abs. Thank you. And they may not spell that out on their profile, but this is what you're hearing on social media and other podcasts. I don't know if that's necessarily true. Just I'm out of curiosity, what do you do for a living?
I'm a men's coach. So I run a company called Bulldog Mindset. So I do.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Basically, I teach men to be more masculine and to personal development for men.
Okay.
And dating coaching. Yeah, that's what, or at least I did a lot more of dating coaching back in the day. So, yeah.
And he was a software developer.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Wrote some books. He's done a lot of stuff.
Okay.
But you're right. Well, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because I just did a video where I was talking about dating apps. And I said that dating apps are beauty pageants for men. That's what they are. And the reason why is because, look, the situation is like so many guys, going back to that black pill thing, is they think that women are only interested in looks because in order to succeed on a dating app as a man, you have to be in the top 20% of men in terms of looks. And they're like, oh, women, they say they don't care about looks, or, but they're so superficial, they're lying, blah, blah, blah. The truth of the matter is that if you switch things around, right? In fact, there are some dating apps, quote, dating apps, that where it is switched around, like Seeking Arrangement, right? Where if you did switch it around, though, and you have a ton of women, right? And very few guys. As a guy, you're going to be extremely selective on looks, right? So that's the situation. Women have a ton of guys, desperate guys all over dating apps. So why would they not pick the most attractive guys? As a man, I would do that. You would do that. Everyone would do that. So that's the situation. It's because of the situation. It brings out the superficiality in women, but only because they have so many options. Whereas in real life, and this is why I told guys in that video, I was like, the best thing to do is to delete the dating apps, go out into the real world, and go and talk to women in the real world, because you're not going to be judged on one dimension, just how you look. On a dating app, the only thing you're going to be judged on as a man, pretty much, is going to be how you look. And so if you want to avoid that superficiality, you got to go out into the real world. It's not that women are super superficial. Men are more superficial. Men value looks more than women. That's why all marketing, right? Like when people disagree with this, I'm like, are you crazy? Have you seen marketing? Have you seen beer commercials? Have you seen every advertisement uses an attractive woman? Some advertisements use an attractive man, but that is not the way to sell your product. So men definitely value physical attractiveness more than women. There's no question about it. It's just that on a dating app, where that's the only dimension that you're being judged about, and you have a ton more men that are desperate than women, women are going to judge on that one dimension. So if you want to be judged on more than one dimension, you have to go out in person and meet women in person, which it is difficult to do today. I do agree with that.
Just going to ask you that. And I And I happen to agree. And I am on many dates. I shouldn't say many. I'm on three active, maybe four, dating apps. But and people laugh when I say this. It's more for research for the podcast, because I can't talk about dating apps if I'm not actively using one or two of them. And I'll tell you something after we stop recording. I just had a question about that. Men are visual. You're right. Men are very visual. So when I go to a dating profile, on a, I'm only looking at women. The first thing I look at is their picture, because I have a type, and if, there's two things I look at. I look at their pictures and their geolocation, because that's a deal breaker for me. I want my next date woman in my life to be within 10 miles of me. I've dated long distance and I've dated short distance, and short distance is so much better. So for me, to travel an hour or 15 minutes to get to somebody, and you don't get to see them during the week because I work. So I got to get up in the morning. So if I get home at 6, or I go right out to her place and I don't get home till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, my night shot, you know? So, yeah. All right. Tell us a little bit. God, I wish I knew you were a dating coach before. We would have, maybe I got to have you back. Tell us about your podcast.
Go ahead. I'll let you, since I've been
talking a lot. Well, actually, when John and I met, I had a dating podcast that I was doing. It was called Date Me or Hate Me. And he was doing, you know, his dating advice for men and everything on YouTube. And so even on our first date, I was like, oh, this is going to be good content. You know, we both kind of do the same things. So obviously when our relationship progressed, we were like, hey, we should really do a podcast together, you know, and we had learned a lot in our previous relationships. Like, John had been married for 20 years and then I had been dating for probably 7 years and, you know, hadn't really found anybody that was worth settling down for until John came along. And so we wanted to start it to, one, be transparent and show obviously what our name means, that to have a better than perfect relationship, it doesn't mean that you don't ever talk about hard things or face hard things or, you know, make mistakes or anything like that. So we wanted to share, you know, our experiences, share the things that we actually struggle with even now, and then also share like the wisdom that we've learned because of those things and how, you know, doing some of the stuff that we talk about or thinking about it and, you know, adopting new perspectives can help you achieve a relationship better than what you were doing before. Because a lot of times it starts with us and doing the work. And a lot of people say that. And even to me, when I was single for so long, that my friends would be like, focus on yourself. I'm like, I am. So it's like, I'm not saying that that's the key, because John and I both realized that in a relationship, you learn a lot of things to work on that you never would have seen by yourself. But just kind of having a podcast where you see two people giving their perspectives. We talk a lot about, like John said, about masculine and feminine, and like I have my opinion on things and he has his opinion, and how those go together and how we've used those opinions to get to where we are today, how we want to help other people get to experience a relationship like him and I have. And so it's really about like helping people, because both of us have been in a place where we didn't think a love like this existed. And then now we're here living it. And we don't want people to think that it's so far-fetched, that it's unobtainable. It is, but it takes
rare. In today's world, in 2025, it is rare to see your modality of a relationship, only because it's just, our society is just going bonkers. They're going all over. And I blame it on social media, and I blame it on Andrew Tate and some, you know, everybody that's out there screaming either anti-male or anti-female.
Right. The hateful messages are so negative, so hate-driven. Like, so much of our society is hate-driven, and that's why we're trying to focus on love and needing each other. Like, we're humans. We need each other. Our, like, society right now, as it is, thrives on separating us. It wants to make us individualized to a point where we don't need anybody. And then we're upset that we're alone. Like, and then we're hating on the people that we want. And but they're not going to come to us when we're hating on them. You know, like, women want men and men want women. And it's like they're hating on each other instead of like acknowledging the great things about one another to bring them closer together.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons why we wanted to start the podcast, too, was because, you know, the relationship that we have, and yes, we have been only together for 4 years. We've been married for 2 years. But I think it's not fathomable to most people, but it is possible, right, by having this dynamic, which in saying that we don't fight. Almost not at all. I'm not saying that we've never fought before, that we don't ever, but I mean, we might have an argument once every couple of months. We don't snip at each other ever. There's no time where I'm annoyed with Nicole and I say something or she says something. But that's a daily habit for most people in most couples, because I've been in relationships, she's been in relationships. That's how most people operate. They're arguing a lot of the time, at least a couple times a week. They're snipping at each other, getting irritated with each other. We spend almost 24/7 together all the time. We get along almost perfectly. I'm not saying that we don't ever have any disagreements, but we work through them and we come out better. And that was the thing, is I was like, we really need to share this with the world, with other people, to teach them how to do this. And really what it comes down to is the fundamentals of having that masculine and feminine dynamic. Because when you really have that and you have that order and you have your roles, you can work through these issues and get to a point where you have this kind of relationship. It really is. It's nothing that I would have ever believed before until we got together and sort of discovered that.
I agree. And you both mentioned that you were in past relationship. I think you said you were married once before. I think it's almost like anything else. You practice until you get perfect at it. And unfortunately for me, now at the ripe age of in my 60s, I think that I am now ready to go out and have a relationship like yours. I just can't seem to find the woman who wants to go along with that. But I'm also being very picky on a couple of issues. But that's the thing.
Because my parents, they would be like, Nicole, are you ever going to get married? You're so picky. And, you know, like I said, I was like dating for like 6 years and I had a toxic relationship before John came along. And, you know, I was beating myself up. I'm like, I waited 6 years and dated around and then I just got in a toxic relationship. But I was like, no, I still have hope that the person meant for me, I will end up with. Right. And John was the person I went on a date with too, because he lived in California and I was in Florida, that I was like, I'm just going to go have a good time. I'm just going to go talk to him. Like, he doesn't live here. I'm not doing long distance. You know, like, that was also a thing. I'm like, I'm not doing across the country. Like,
no,
doing that. But, and since I had genuinely no expectations is when it got to bloom into what it actually is.
Who moved? So where are you now? California or Florida?
California.
We're in California, yeah.
So how did the early stages look like? So you went on that one date in Florida. Mm-hmm. And then you went back to California?
Yeah. And we didn't see each other for, was it 4 months, I think? And then I was
fully expecting John to never talk to me again. Because I'm a woman. I'm like, you know, he's going back. He'll probably talk to other women. Like, we had a good time, but, you know, I'm not going to hear from him. But he was consistent. And he was like, no, I'm going to see you. And everything he said, he backed up. And that also shows what kind of a good man he is because he didn't just tell me things I wanted to hear. Granted, there was some drama in the beginning of our relationship, but he backed up what he said. And so, you know.
And then you moved to California. Yeah. Okay.
I moved to Florida actually first, and then we moved to California because my daughter is here in California. And I really, like, in my...
No, makes sense.
You know, I thought, oh, yeah, I can do that long. Yeah, you can't raise a child long distance. You know, like, you got to be there. So we both moved back to San Good. Diego. So, yeah.
All right. We got to wrap it up. Gosh, I'm going to have you back because I just think there's so this whole concept, you know, there's a lot of digital dating. That's the name of my podcast. There's a lot of dating podcasts out there today. A lot. We're oversaturated. But I think your concept and your message needs to get out there more because I'm not hearing enough of it.
Yeah.
And it can work. And I'm ready to now all the mistakes that I made over the past 20, 25 years. And I stopped dating. I took a couple of years off. And now I think I have, with all the lessons I've learned, all the research, this podcast and many other things, I'm also a recovering alcoholic. So I have the 12-step program that I lean on. I'm now ready to get into a relationship and I would love to get into something like yours, whether she works or not, or whether she's retired, because a lot of the women I'm meeting are retired, but mm-hmm. I'd be okay either way. So tell us where we can find your podcast and anything else, your social media, and then we'll say goodbye.
So easiest thing is just to go on YouTube and search for Better Than Perfect Podcast. We do a video podcast. So we shoot in a studio every week. We put out a new episode. If you prefer to just listen to the audio, we're on all the places where you can find podcasts, Spotify, Apple, you know, iTunes or whatever it is. And then we're on the social media on TikTok and Instagram. We put clips from our shows on there.
Okay. And I'll put all of that in the show notes. And I will have to come. I didn't have a chance to listen to the podcast because I came racing home from work. And I have three podcasts. So I'm like burning the candle at both ends. Yeah. It's crazy. But I'm hoping to retire and then just do podcasting. So anyway, guys, thank you for coming on the show so much. I'm going to go watch your podcast and let's keep in touch and maybe we'll have you back one day.
Sounds awesome.
Really being a pleasure. So
very cool. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank John and Nicole so much for stopping by. It is such a, having a husband and wife or a couple on it, you know, I've been doing, I have well over several hundred episodes, I think 200 and something episodes now. And I've only had several couples on. And it's such a different dynamic when you get both perspectives, especially a couple like John and Nicole. So thank you very, very much for coming on. And all their information will be in the show notes. And if you enjoyed today's show, please show me that by maybe subscribing and hitting like and leaving a review down below. And there's a little link in my show notes called Buy Me a Cup of Coffee where you could donate a couple of bucks. Also, don't forget about my friend Paul Bauer. He's got a great podcast called the Come On Man Podcast for those guys out there that are struggling looking for the women. Check out his podcast and check out his merch. The link is in the show notes. And guys, thank you for listening because digital dating is still going strong and I got four more months at least of recordings for you guys. So keep tuning in each week and spread the word. And until next time, I love you guys. Ciao.